Hi there. Welcome to Mushroom Hour.
Well, man, I feel welcome. How's it going?
We're here with Tomas Garrett, member of the Oakland Hyphy team, founder of the Mycozine, and all-around Myconaut explorer, consciousness researcher. Tomas, thank you for coming to us live in studio.
Pew, 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 pew. I'm so honored to be here. I heard you just opened up the new space, and it was really cool to stop by last time and see you at your spot. But now that we get to do this in person, it's a super, super dope vibe.
I like it. I like it a lot. It's a lot different interviewing not through a computer screen and in person, just like a different energy. And so it's fun to get to kind of learn how to interview a little bit again. Do the real thing.
Oh, yeah. Man, see, like, me and Ian, we do this a lot. This conversational thing, like, that's the basis of our friendship, is to just shoot the shit. You know, we've been doing that since we worked together back in 2019. Ian, by the way, is one of the founders of Hi-Fi Labs. And it's really what I've done over the past 4 or 5 years I've been in California, is just try to find spaces to have meaningful conversations. And so now to do it in a platform with like recording equipment, and I know you're saying this isn't super futuristic and whatnot, but you got the keyboard, you got the controllers, we're in a whole radio station. I mean, this is tight.
It definitely looks and feels proper. And yeah, last time you were on the show, it was yourself, Ian, Reggie, kind of founding squad of Hi-Fi Labs. And that was an amazing conversation. Now, since then, a lot's been happening. I mean, for Hi-Fi Labs, a lot's been happening for you. I mean, I just said you're the founder of Mycozine. Yeah. That didn't exist when we talked last time.
Yeah.
And following you on social media, you've been going on a tour around the country to like every single mushroom festival, it feels like. Showing up, going out foraging. So yeah, give us that like arc, that 10,000 foot view of what has Tomas been doing since our last interview about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
What's been going on? And maybe you can start with like the trip you just went on, or wherever you want to start.
Well, shoot. Mushrooms. I love mushrooms. Yeah, we'll start there.
All right, good. This is the mushroom.
Basically, last time I was here, we were just about to throw the first Oakland Psychedelic Conference. We had just had an event in, I think, Denver. And this was 1 year after Reggie and I and my sister had gone to this Detroit Psychedelic Conference, and we're like, whoa, people can just like really talk about this out loud to each other. And a year passed, and Reggie was like, we're gonna do this like where we're at. And that happened. We came on the podcast, and like a couple weeks later, I think we had run the first Oakland Psychedelic Conference. And since, we've had over, I think, 10 to 12 events across the country.
Massive events.
Pretty big events that we've either been a part of or like contributed to or like created. And it took us all over the country. And right now, Reggie's in like Wonderland in Miami or something like that. We're going to be at South by Southwest next year. I mean, it's kind of blowing up. But since that time, 2 years ago since I seen you, I actually went back into the working world. I went and did cancer research for this big biopharmaceutical company because my background's in chemistry. And right. So I was doing liquid chromatography with mass spec for their ADC programs, and jargon for, we were trying to find out what ways we could solve cancer without using regular chemo, which like kills the whole body. This would like specifically target tumor cells. That was cool. I was able to stack up a little bit of bread so that I could come back into the mushroom space unencumbered. And what that led to was this thing, the Mycozine, which you see, and what we're talking about today. This has been a year, dude. A year ago, I just had an idea on a plane. I was flying back home from Cleveland, and it was like a 4.5 hour flight. And I said, should I go to sleep or should I get to work? And for some reason, I was like, let's go. I pulled out book 20. I think it was book 20, actually. I'm on book 24 now. Or maybe it was book 22.
Book 20. What are these books?
Oh, this is book 24. So in 2018, I just had a little tiny pocketbook, and I started effectively journaling. But, you know, as a kid, I didn't journal. That was what girls did or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and then as an adult, I picked up a notebook, and I just copied what I was doing in the laboratory, which was like writing laboratory notes for my life. Yeah. That first week was crazy. So much stuff went down. Like, buddy of mine at work had gotten arrested by like a SWAT team Apparently, he had like robbed a couple banks. It's crazy.
So you had a lot to journal about.
Right. The first journal. The first week. Insane. My brother gets locked up for 4 years. Like, that happened on the first week. My boss, like, at the time, had a baby like several months early that like died in his arms. Like, it was just a lot of things crammed into this first week, and it was hella intense. And I was like, well, shit, I guess I got to keep writing.
Yeah.
The back of that first book, I wrote, I actually drew a picture of the United States of America, and I drew a little line across of where I was going to go and get to California. By the end of that book, I had started my master's program. We had bought a house, and I had driven across the country to double my salary and become a chemist in California. And I was like, well, shit, this is working. And
the journaling is magical.
Yeah. Bro, I'm on book 24 now, and I'm doing all these things. We're having this conversation because I write the date every day. That's it.
I love that when you called it book 24, I'm thinking like the book of Tomas. Like,
pretty much.
We can all, it's just funny to think of. We can all have that almost spiritual or religious significance type of text for our life. Why not?
My name is literally biblical. Now. Like, if you think about it, you know, the Doubting Tom. But the truth is, like, I am a scientist, but I was in a laboratory where they said, if you didn't write it down, it didn't happen. And I just realized, like, well, shit, if I write it down, does it happen? Fuck around and find out, write it down, and then bang, it happened. And so I was writing on book 20. I was flying home from Cleveland, and zines are something that I had found out about probably like maybe 8 or 10 years ago. You know, like, this is a form of...
It's an art form.
Yeah, this is a form of media that has existed for a while. I mean, people have been passing out little leaflets and pamphlets since time immemorial. I'm pretty sure that's like how the Communist Manifesto got started. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like little pamphlets being passed around. This is what the Panthers did. This is what people have been doing to organize since forever. I'm pretty sure the Revolutionary War was based on like printing press and people being able to like pass things around.
Absolutely.
This is the First Amendment, baby. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Freedom of speech. And so I found a way to like fold up a zine. You take a single sheet of paper, you can fold it up into an 8-page situation like this, where you got a front cover, a back cover, and 6 pages in between. But what I thought to myself was like, no one utilizes that inner space. No one utilizes the inner side. Yeah. And so when I designed my thing, I was like, how do I highlight people from all over the country in that inner space and make it like a centerfold, but instead of, you know, something dirty, it's mushroom porn.
Right.
So I'm sitting on this plane. I take out a piece of paper, no bigger than this piece of paper, fold it up into a zine, no bigger than like half my palm. You know what I mean? It's like a small sheet of paper, fold it up. And I wrote out exactly what the first zine was going to be, minus the last page. I wanted to put like resources of watch Fantastic Fungi, because it was a movie that was like super impactful to me, or read this book of how to grow this mushroom or how to cultivate, something like that. But then that first week, San Francisco decriminalized mushrooms. And so I put like on the back of that, it's just like San Francisco decriminalized. Like we did it. 15th city. Now we're at over 20. And it's, it was just an idea. This was on Labor Day, I believe, which is like what, September 1st or 4th or something, like whatever the year.
I should know that, but that sounds right.
I think it's like the first Monday or something.
First Monday
of September, something like that. So whatever that was in 2022, I'm flying back. The Oakland Psychedelic Conference, the second one where this came out at, was in like 2 weeks.
Right.
And I was like giving myself a little 2-week window. I'm going to print out 100 of these. I'm going to cut them, fold them, design them, whatever. And then I'm going to just hand them out at this conference. That was a year ago. I went to Office Max, paid way too much money to get these printed.
Right.
But I had a biopharmaceutical job and I was like, screw it. This is for the community. Let's go. So I just paid the hundreds of dollars to print on lower quality paper with like uncut edges and everything. And I literally numbered them 1 through 100 and handed them out. I got such a good reception that I was like, all right, let's keep it going. And I think on like the next plane ride, maybe a week later, I like got back into the mode and just wrote out the KPIs of like what I needed to achieve within this amount of time, what was going to be my growth strategy. Like it all just flowed out like a download of how I was going to achieve what I wanted to achieve within a certain period of time. And then by December, when I achieved that, I think edition 3 had finished the Thanksgiving edition. I had reached over 1,000 people or whatever. I had gotten to 100 different cities that I had sent it to. And I was like picking up steam. I was in a few countries now and I'm like, what the heck? And now it's over 200 cities. Now it's 10 countries. Now at 3,800 followers or something. Yeah. And it's just by copying the mycelium and like finding ways to distribute information using the tools that I learned from growing mushrooms.
I mean, it's an amazing story. And there's a couple potent images in there. I love you talking about the history of pamphleting, right?
Yeah.
Like that is such a rich tradition. And especially in this age when so much is digital, that media stream is clogged. So it's like you start handing out pamphlets, people are like, whoa, this is like the novel older technology that we can bring back.
Dude, I'm seeing people listen to albums, listening to cassettes, doing analog things every left and right.
And here we are in a station. This is 103.3 KPCA in Petaluma.
Bro, public that's access so cool. Radio. This is literally tuning on it. A dial. Like you yeah. can, you don't, what? You yeah. don't have to have internet or nothing. You can turn on your transistor radio and turn it to a dial. What did you say? 103.3. That's going in the book. That's cool. Let's I'm on 101.
The Book of Tomas.
The Book of
24,
Tomas.
Volume 24. And just, there's something key there, too, about, you know, such a great life lesson in thinking about setting goals for things. This is something I don't do enough, I feel like, is when you have an idea, you want to try something. I feel like putting any kind of goal on it, I don't know, it changes it for me. Mm. When in reality, what that does is it kind of drives you. It's like a motivation. Like, hey, I've got a target that
I want to hit. It gives you structure.
It gives you structure. That's
and,
right.
And
that's
structure.
Tyranny of structurelessness. Sometimes if it's not structured, things don't get done, and it actually feels like more pressure
yeah.
if you don't give yourself that framework.
It's just a step at a time. I'm really grateful for my time in grad school learning about business, because I was coming at it from a chemist perspective. I was the only chemist in my program for sure.
Yeah.
And I was picking up game, not off of the accounting lessons, not off of the finance lessons, not off
so
of the marketing.
So this is an MBA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was picking up game off of hearing what the people who had already done something, who are already in like C-suite positions, who are already consulting and making their money and having taught classes and learned what they're learning and doing this for fun, they would say stuff like, if you change one thing a day for 3 months, you're already almost at 100 things you've changed. And yeah. if you've changed 100 things like in 3 months, like imagine what you could do if you just keep that mindset one step at a time, constantly keep moving. And when I heard that, I was like, well, shit, I can really achieve anything so long as I break it down into like a structured path and create the path for myself forward.
I'm trying to think of his name. I think it's Napoleon Hill, or is some kind of motivational, kind of inspiring speaker. He's at this point, I think it was 70s or 80s. Mm. And he talks about the power of journaling, the power. He's like, everybody's got good ideas. The problem is you're not writing any down.
Mm.
And it's just funny when you said that, he was playing in my head. And again, I might've gotten the name wrong. I'll look that up and put it in the show notes. But he was saying, if you write down the 5 best ideas that you have in the morning, by the end of a month, you've got 150 ideas.
Bro,
that
it's just
you can
that
start
simple.
Working with. Yeah,
it's that simple math. And then like eventually with those 150, some of them are going to be the same. And so when you see something that has like, oh, I don't know, this is a mode. This is something that's like
probably
showed up 6-7 times.
Yeah.
Guess what? It's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
If this is an outlier, it's probably not. Oh man, I love how my brain works. Like just talking about outliers and statistical analysis, I'm like thinking about how I've been breaking down all of the HiFi data. I busted down all of the previous data that we've had and put it into buckets to see if I could find trends and like what are outliers. And yeah.
Well, talk a little bit about then. Yeah. What's changed with HiFi? Because, you know, when we talked about it before, like you said, it was still a very early point. You were still getting your feet under you for the events. But obviously the testing had begun, and we're talking about testing compounds and composition of psilocybin containing mushrooms.
Yeah.
So there's kind of, and very multifaceted what you guys are doing, but what's going on with that today?
Shoot. Well, we're just about to finish up I think this is like our 4th or 5th cup, and we're going to be presenting the results in mid-December. I think Ian had told me we're something at over 1,000 samples that we've run through our instrument. And so
wow.
like the amount of data that we have is kind of enormous.
Yeah.
And now we're starting to be able to tease out a little bit of meaning, because the data pool is much bigger than just like the anecdotal, oh, I tried his golden teachers, or oh, I had this lizard king.
Which a lot, as we move into an environment where things are increasingly decriminalized, you guys reinforced that with me last time, of how important it is to test and actually know what compounds, if we're going to move this thing to any form of legitimacy, having it move out of the anecdotal space into the very formalized scientific space is a really big step.
Yeah, and I think it takes both sides too, because like the scientific space misses a lot too, in my personal opinion. Mm. My entire career has been based around like finding unknowns in unknowns. And so, you know, when I was working in the food and drug space before coming out to California, we'd get manufacturing samples or food samples, and we'd have to run an abundance of tests to find out what's going on inside. And then when I moved to cannabis, I was doing the same thing to find out what was happening with pesticides or solvents in these different cannabis matrices. And so now as we move into mushrooms, it's the same thing. And so when I was re-listening to the previous episode, I think we were at like 5 or 6 tryptamines at the point. Now Ian's got this panel of like 17 different compounds that we're looking for, and we're starting to see a nuance of like what's showing up in these mushrooms. And certain mushrooms are producing things that like we didn't even imagine or would be there, you know? It's fascinating to me.
Well, and so, yeah, basics of tryptamines, obviously those family of compounds are responsible for psilocybin and a bunch of different psychoactive drugs that we know about. When you say 17, what does that mean?
So the way chromatography works is actually we can just tell you if something is like not what we're looking for or what we're looking for.
Okay, so you have to be specific. You're filtering and you have to know.
You have to know what you're looking for.
Right.
And if you basically get like this little window where you can look in and say like, all right, if it was here, it would be right there. And so if I see it right there, then it's there. But if I look through this very specific spot and it's not there, then it's not in this compound because we know where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so the way chromatography works is like you put in, let's just say, a Bloody Mary. And what comes out is a pickle, then vodka, then tomato juice, then whatever, sausage or cheese.
That shows up as the color lines.
And they show up as these peaks. Right, and so okay. Like you start off with like a mixture, this Bloody Mary. And then by the time it comes off the instrument, it's coming off as a pickle. It's coming off as vodka, tomato juice, as this.
Those are peaks
And the chromatogram, but it's separated by time. And so as it goes through the column, what it does is the column's chemistry, what's going on a, not even a microscopic, like a molecular level, is it's separating out all these different compounds. So we start with a mushroom, we get it into solution, and then as it goes through the column, everything separates out. And so if we had started with a Bloody Mary, this comes out, this comes out, this comes out. Well, in the Bloody Mary of mushrooms, it'll be like adenosine or psilocybin or psilocin or baocystin or norbaocystin or psilocin, whatever. And we can run tests before we even put mushrooms on the system of like pure standards that we get, their certified reference materials. We get them from standard manufacturers and we'll say, all right, if we run the same method on our column, where does this compound show up?
Okay.
And it'll show up within the 0 to 20 minutes or whatever, 15 minutes. If it lands exactly at 13.2, then it's associated with this compound, right?
Interesting. So that's just a nature of the reaction of whatever compound it is.
Yeah, and every time you put it through that same process, it's going to show up at the exact same time. That's how we do that. Every single time. And it's very, very reliable. It's very repeatable. If you can get separation, then every time you know caffeine's going to show up right here, you know sugar's going to show up right here, you know alcohol's going to show up right here, depending on whatever method. So we've developed a method, and kudos to Ian, that has separated out these 17 different compounds now. So we're looking for things like DMT. We're looking for things like 4-ACO-DMT because there's people putting in pseudo-psilocybin effectively into their substrates, into whatever, to try to like enhance what's going on. And so what we'll be able to detect is if you're doping or spiking your sample,
yeah,
we'll see it. You know what I mean?
Okay. And so those compounds, was that something that we already had one of those like baselines for?
When you say we, somebody does. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'm saying scientists somewhere might have, or it's not something you have access to. So maybe some of those tryptamine compounds, you've had to figure out where does this show? How do I know that that spike is that compound? That's something that's your.
Yeah. Because at first we're testing for invention. What we know, but then there's the things that we don't know. And so then we got to find out what is this, you know?
Interesting.
And as we expand, because like you start off with a solution and then you'll get all these different peaks.
Yeah.
Now you might have standards for like 5 of the 10 peaks, but if you can only quantify those 5, then that's all you can quantify. Those other 5, we still got to figure out what it is. We still got to understand. And that's how this all works anyways.
Yeah.
And so we've advanced the amount of compounds we're testing for. We've expanded to now having tested over 1,000 samples. And since Ian has started this program called the Center for Microanalytics, where we're teaching people how to do chromatography, and like that's the basis of everything that we've been trying to create anyways, is not only like a way for cultivators to find out what's happening inside of their mushrooms, but giving cultivators and people in the community the ability to test these things for themselves. Because if we constantly rely on external resources to validate our data or do whatever,
right,
we'll fall down the same path that cannabis fell down, where now everybody just smokes on the same tree because everybody's just trying to get the highest number, and it's a lot of lab shopping. It's not as legitimate to me as I would say I've seen in other industries, i.e. biopharmaceuticals, food and drugs.
That's interesting. Is it because certain people got a chokehold on the testing? Like, we're the reputable lab for cannabis. We know what all the spikes are. Come to us.
Right. And the thing is, when it comes to the spikes with cannabis, because it's such a sticky matrix, they're not as clean and defined as they might be within mushrooms or within other food and drug testing or biopharmaceuticals. Like, some peaks are very, very sharp and refined, and it's like very obvious to detect. My inclination on how like the cannabis market is working is might not be as much separation. And so if you don't separate all these compounds out,
right,
a peak might be twice as large because it's actually two things
overlapping.
And if you're not doing your due diligence to separate them out, you could just quantify the whole thing as something that it's not,
and
really
say this has a higher level of whatever, THC, or which I would assume is the holy grail. Like, give me that highest number.
All right. Like, but when it's really also other things that are just inflating that size of that peak, or so it's not like just comparisons the same way. That's gripe with the cannabis industry. And I know there's a lot of labs like working really hard to make their methods as practical and as best as they can. And a lot of it has to do with the legislation too. Like, some people get kind of, you know, shoehorned into doing weird analysis just because of how the legislation is written. So that's why with Hyphae Labs and what we're doing with the mushroom space, we're trying to like change the conversation from the beginning, not even have like just who's got the highest potency. But as we understand these 17 different compounds, we can actually create profiles, and we can say that we're not even just shooting for the highest potency, because some people don't want to take something that's going to make them see aliens if they want a microdose, you know, like,
yeah.
Mothers going to soccer practice might want a little pick-me-up that's going to help them stay focused and manage 30 kids running around, and they don't need to go see aliens. And then somebody who wants to go see aliens doesn't need the soccer mom dose. Like,
now, have you guys tied some of these compounds to some of the different effects? And obviously, we're going to give the caveat that these substances where you're performing this testing is in Oakland, California. These substances are decriminalized. That might not be the case everywhere, so we don't condone or condemn the use of any of these substances. So I want to get that caveat out there. But, you know, when people talk about the anecdotal experience of being or taking psilocybin-containing mushrooms, you know, there's a lot that goes along with that. There is the psychedelic experience, the visuals, different things like that. But then there's also people talk about visual acuity. People talk about an openness. I mean, have you guys started to be able to tie compounds to maybe effects? Like, if someone wanted more of, hey, I want to play with my kids, I might not want as high in this, I want higher in this. Has that started, or are we still a little far away from that?
So, short answer, we've started. Long answer, we're far away from it. Like,
okay.
And it starts with the data. It starts with just collecting, hey, which tryptamines are showing up, and like, what is the concentration of the main tryptamine, which is psilocybin? Because we do know that psilocybin turns into psilocin, and that fits into your receptors that allow you to feel a psychedelic experience. There's so much more to be learned about the other compounds, but we don't even know completely the relationship with that. We don't really know the relationship between people's body chemistries and whatnot. I've had many accounts from the same people having the same batch that they've had different experiences at the same dose.
Interesting.
You know, and I think that has a lot to do with people's diets, a lot to do with people's emotions and mindset going into things. There's so many variables here that the only way we're going to even be able to tease that out is by finding a consistent mushroom in the first place. And so what I really think it looks like is finding the 5 mg/g mushroom, finding the 10 mg/g mushroom, the 15, the 20, the 25, and the 30, so that once we have a consistent dose, then we can start collecting that data. That's how we get there. So what I can say now is, if you want to know what's good for the soccer mom, it's probably the lower dose. It's probably something that's right. in the microdosing range, as we call it, on the spectrum, between that 0 to 5 milligrams per gram or something like that. And then if you want to go be recreational, it's somewhere between 5 and 10 milligrams per gram. And it's really just so that once we get a specific dose, then a beer will be a beer, a shot will be a shot, a glass of wine will be a glass of wine. But currently, we're at like a, hey, have a pint glass of this thing. Well, what's in there? I don't know. Could be moonshine. Sure. It could be beer. Well, yeah. That's a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess that is always the case for using, you know, when people talk about, I mean, my hackles get raised about like artificial versions of these compounds, artificial psilocybin, or, but that is the main argument is, look, we can control the dose very precisely. But and I know the last interview we did, I think you agree, I'm one that believes there's a cofactor situation going on, an entourage effect between some of these compounds that changes a lot of what the experience is for whoever the user is. But that's really interesting to think about, how do we find a species or a varietal of a species that is consistent in just the fruit body? Well, because everybody knows mushrooms can be different sizes, and then the compounds within them are so different. So yeah, that's a challenge I wouldn't have immediately thought of, but it is blindingly obvious. It makes it a challenge to start mapping some of this out. Now, are you guys, in my mind, from what I know, and if it's not apparent to any listeners already, I'm a total novice at chemistry other than the people I've talked to. Is this kind of research pioneering? I mean, do you guys envision this turning into something that gets funded in partnership with a Stanford, or is that like not really in the frame? Are those people doing some of this themselves?
They're definitely doing it themselves. I see zero reason why we can't collaborate with them.
Because you guys, like you said, you guys have the background.
And there's already published papers. Like Ian just published a paper with a professor from, I believe, the Ohio State University anyways. Like, and some other people who are like known within the community, like Hart and Alan Rockefeller and Jordan Jacobs. Like, right. Citizen scientists and scientists coming together to write these papers. I think Jonathan Slott was on there as well. And he's like a PhD, I believe, at the Ohio State. I don't know. I know him through Ian and my buddy Carson, another person on the Hyphae team.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of mixing within the community as well. But yeah, there's zero reason why not, why we couldn't work with different groups. And frankly, we have probably more research than some of these
institutions,
like straight up.
Yeah.
And so I think there's totally room to collaborate. We haven't done that yet, but as the space grows, why not?
Well, I think it's so much of the future of this, because right now, obviously it's on the rise. Anyone listening has heard of people microdosing. It's more in the mainstream consciousness than ever. The soccer moms are talking about it. By the time it reaches that level, you know, this is a cultural force, and this is such a key part of that. And I just love that it's people. You know, we talked about the cannabis space. In that space, so many of the people that were kind of the progenitors of the culture get pushed out, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows that. So I love that you guys are in the mix, kind of creating a space.
From the beginning.
Signing on to scientific papers. And that's kind of what I was hoping your answer would be. Not that there's going to be an ivory tower institution that kind of says, well, this is the research, you know, and starts to kind of try to push other people out. So I love that you guys are at the center of it. I hope that we see that kind of collaboration.
Yeah. I mean, I'm willing. I like to refer to institutions as fart sniffers. I mean, I come from academia. My parents studied a lot. I've been around universities my whole life. Met a lot of smart people, and they don't know anything. You know what I mean? It's a lot of like, ooh, look at my theory.
Well, and there's
smells good. Oh, look at your. My theory is better than that. And I mean, to be frankly honest, there's a situation with that academia where if you publish something, the incentive to challenge someone's publication is so minimal, because it's either challenging them is either career suicide, because they'll rebuttal you and then call you a hack. Or if you're calling them a hack and you prove their paper to be wrong, then you're discrediting their scientific integrity. So there's basically zero incentive.
Right.
Yeah, there's zero incentive to challenge anybody's science. There's zero incentive to like repeat data. And so there's so much built on like false premises that I've seen throughout my career and throughout my academic career that frankly, like, unless I'm really reading the basis of a paper, I take every single paper with a massive grain of salt.
Yeah.
Regardless of the publication it's coming from. Because even the best publications are subject to error and fault because we're just humans here.
And they have their own limitations.
And they also have their own gatekeeping and weird little systems and da 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 da. And so when we create situations like, let's tie it back to the zine here, you know, the reason this even came up was to create space for people in between our little conferences. Yeah. Like, there's these conferences that come as an amalgamation of all this talent, all these people coming together to talk about what they've done, whether they speak or whether they like write legislation or whether they do this for their community or whatever. And we'll congregate, we'll come to these conferences, and then there'll be great lectures and there'll be great side talks. But then in between that, it's like, well, now what?
Yeah.
And then so I created this as like a space for people to come together so that we can actually keep these threads moving and we don't have to rely on subject matter because we're figuring this out in real time right now.
Well, and it's kind of perfect because mycology is already a science where that happens, and maybe it's just because it's the only one of kind of the hard sciences that I've been exposed to, the professionals in the field. But it feels like they have that room outside of the formal channels of paper writing and, you know, your thesis and all that, where they can discuss ideas with their peers outside of kind of that intense crucible of your career, and expand on ideas and challenge ideas. And my dad was a scientist for 40 years.
Yeah.
And so I think there's so much in that. There's so much discipline you learn, so much information, obviously, that you're building off of that is good information. But I appreciate what you're saying, that if you only exist in that space, in the very formal academic space, you're severely limited in how much you can talk about things. So I love that ideally between the events you guys hold with the mycozine, it gives people a chance to circulate ideas. And then the amateur who is asking just as good of questions as the guy who's got the lab can rub up against that person and throw ideas back and forth. I love that you're creating that dynamic because that's how we're going to move forward.
And that's how we're moving forward currently.
And not have... You know, what do you say, like false prophets or false premises that we're building on, or sacred cows that we're just keeping there, right? We got to like make sure we're always willing to move those out just because we need to stay on the forefront and stay with the thread of truth that's going to help this move forward.
I'm just trying to figure this out one day at a time, like everybody else. And one of the things that I wrote on the last mycozine was, a quote from Reggie, he said, "No one person has all the answers, but the community does." And I'm sure he probably got that. Well, maybe he came up with it. Maybe he got it from somewhere else, but I'm quoting him on it. On the back of every single one of these editions, I put like 15 to 20 different people on there.
Yeah.
And the intention behind that was to like me offering what I've learned from cultivation. So in the first five books, there's like page five is step one, step two, step three, step four, step five of how to grow mushrooms. Where I go through the steps of like what I've broken down cultivating mushrooms into. Starts with DNA or some type of genetic. Then there's like an initial growth medium. Within psilocybin, we call it grain. Within the second growth medium, it's the substrate, which is – grain is also a substrate. But like people refer to that as the poo or the coco-coir or whatever. And then the fourth step is the fruiting conditions, creating the environment for that mycelium to create these hyphal knots and turn into mushrooms. And then the last step is looping the cycle back to DNA. And how do you take a mushroom and either extract the spores or take the tissue from the clone or whatever to re-loop the cycle?
And this is cultivating any mushroom.
This is cultivating in general. And so like what I'm trying to do with the mycozine is take the lessons I've learned throughout that cycle and implement them into not only the marketing of this project, but just all the things in my life. And so when I was learning to cultivate, when you move from the step of DNA to grain, when I was first starting with mushrooms, I got an agar plate and I would like cut it up and drop it into a grain bag, and then it would myceliate. Like I said, this could be with any mushroom. You could grow oysters, whatever, shiitake, anything. Take genetics, put it into the grain, and it'll grow out. What I eventually learned is that you can do grain-to-grain transfers. So once you actually myceliate a whole bag of grain, well, now you don't have to wait to the agar plate. Now you have literally thousands of inoculation points that you could spread into thousands of bags. Like, you could really just multiply out crazy. Yeah. And that's the idea behind the back of each of these mycozines. It's like, if I have different inoculation points, I'm not only myceliating this grain bag from one point and then waiting for it to go across the whole grain bag. Now I can hit it from Miami, D.C., Washington, Chicago, Milwaukee, Denver.
Right.
And then if each edition has that and I can shout out a person in each one, well, guess what? Now I'm sitting at 120 people who've been shouted out in six editions in 1 year, and that's how we got here.
If the world is your grain substrate, you need to have a lot more inoculation. Yeah, that's something I learned pretty early on, is the more genetics you introduce, yeah, you can start with a small amount, but the more you put in there, the faster it's going to myceliate.
Exactly, and the more places that you inoculate from. And so what I was really thinking from the jump is that, like, once you go through this cycle of 1 through 5, like, you can keep going through this loop and expanding to, like, isolate your genetics and make them more towards what you like. But it actually expands beyond the loop of 1 through 5, because step 6 of 5 is show somebody how to grow the mushrooms. Step 7 of 5 is show somebody how to grow the mushrooms. Step 8 of 5 is, like, get those people who have shown other people how to grow the mushrooms to come together and do that. And so that's what these conferences are. You know what I mean? Step 9 is, and as we hit these fractals, this can go out in every direction to all the things that we do. Not just this project, but truly, like, when I'm expanding these relationships here or there, like, I had my first podcast in, like, I think February or something. I was still working at the biopharmaceutical job. It's this kid that I had tutored and when he was in high school for chemistry, and he was like, yo, come on my podcast. And then now I'm in, like, a whole studio doing this thing, and I'm just like, well, shit, I could really start doing this.
Well it's a beautiful framework then. So this is your framework for how you kind of approach everything. This is the way that you can engage, is start with the genetics, inoculate the substrate, let it spread, then take that output, spread it to others, show other people how to grow. So you could apply that to anything.
All things. And frankly,
so the mushrooms have totally inspired how you move.
They
have
taken me over like cordyceps all day. Like, I truly believe that the psilocybin is the cordyceps of humans all day. And whether or not I'm going to be, you know, taken over, latch onto a tree, and a fruiting body is going to come out of my body to myceliate, I don't think that's necessary. I'm already sporulating.
Right, you're already doing it.
I'm infecting people with my words. I'm infecting people with my actions and my writings. You can call it infection. You can call it myceliation. You can call it inoculation, whatever you want. But you brought up the point that, like, this applies to everything. I don't know, man. I've been having a hard time finding the difference between anything anymore.
It's all coming together.
Everything is everything.
Yeah.
And the mycelium has showed me that through patients, that we are all connected through this source energy that binds everything.
That keeps everything in motion. Why does matter spontaneously assemble? There's something going on. Yeah, and I just mentioned it yesterday, but in my interview with Dennis McKenna, I love that he talks about these, like, biological timescales and how we are just moving to a biological singularity where eventually it's just a giant biological mat covering the rock that is the earth. He's like, right now we're still these individuated units of biological matter shooting chemicals at each other and mediating relationships, and eventually that gets closer and closer, like mitochondria coming into a cell.
Yeah,
it just starts combining,
becoming a literally, larger organism.
Yeah, so literally everything is the same. Well, that's a massive concept that I love, and I find that too. But bringing it back here, what is the future then? I mean, we talked about that future. We're all going to be a giant biological mat. Got it. Until then, what is the future of the mycozine? I mean, book 24, maybe you've already thought it out. What is that next goal, or what are you thinking, you know, near term, long term?
So I got a couple of things, like short term and long term goals. I know what edition 7 is going to look like. It's going to be like a shout out basically to the different pillars of the community that have built it out. There's only 6 pages, and so I have to be kind of intentional about what I do in there.
Yeah, there's a lot of people.
There's definitely a lot of people. And so what I want to do is, like, shout out the people who are the legacy actors. You know, like, I want to shout out the people who have really taken the last several years to put in the work to establish lanes in the different aspects of the mushroom community, whether it be through education, whether it be through cultivation, whether it be through the providing of resources for people to do this sort of thing, or whether it be through getting out into the woods and doing the thing.
Yeah.
And by having, like, each of these buckets of, like, how you as mushroom person who's in the myco community, somebody who's receiving the mycozine, when they get edition 7, they're going to be like, oh, shoot, this new industry, this new community, this new space, where do I fit within here? I'm hoping to offer, like, cardinal points to say, hey, if you want to work in the manufacturing side of it, this is what it would look like. Developing the relationship with mycelium and understanding how to cultivate, how to source, how to do this, that, and the third. If it looks like art, it looks like seeing what these artists have done and how they've created spaces around that. If it looks like building community, look at these conferences and look at these organizations, look at these festivals that have been created by the people doing it. If it looks like education, look at these cultivators who have taught other people their platforms and what does it look like to spread that information. And then somehow finding a way to fit it into 4.5 by 5 inch little sheets. Right. And then on the inside, I don't even know. This one's going to be tough because it's like, I'm excited for edition 7. I don't know what I'm going to put on the inside, but there's just so much crazy mushroom cultivation going on right now that the first one I thought was cool. And now that I have like 5 inner posters of all these mushrooms, mushrooms are getting nuts, man. People are really growing crazy things.
I've just seen the proliferation of people trying new cultivation techniques, like the number of new, and this is not really a great metric, but the number of new social media accounts based around mushrooms blows me away.
Yeah.
Like, because I've been like on and off of social media, I get back on and it's like, there's so many people doing this work and spreading this word. And that's what's amazing to see, is you want to think this is part of a bigger wave.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, hey, I'm contributing my spores to this giant wave that's happening. And we just all kind of get involved and it moves culture forward.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed too, a lot recently, you've been doing a lot of foraging.
Yes.
That was my point. That was the thing I loved when I first got into mushrooms. And then I kind of had the same thing where I wanted to show people, here are people you should learn from, because these are the people that are really inspiring me.
Yeah.
But what's that been like for you? I don't know if you were super into foraging before, but recently I've noticed
that's
like
what
you're
I
going
did.
Up to Mendo, you're going to Humboldt, which are the places you go further northwest when you're in California. There's more mushrooms.
Oh, totally. So but what's there's mushrooms like? All over the country. And that's – I really appreciate you bringing that up. And I want to finish up the one last thing about what the future of this is.
Yeah, yeah.
My goal was to actually come up with like either 2 sets of 4 or 3 sets of 4 – and then put that into its own little magazine, put that into a book, so that once we
that's
have
what I
this all together,
kind of a book. Yeah.
It's an anthology,
yeah.
book 24. You know what I mean? Like once you put together books 1 through 12, you have the Mycozine edition 1 or whatever, right. Like the full set. Eventually it'll turn into like a full magazine, probably depending on contributors, how many people I get signed up. It has to make sense for me. You know what I mean? It's a lot of work to put in all of that energy. I think it's totally worth it, but I'm not really like a writer like that. I'm just assembling this because I like to educate and like build community. But back to your original point about the foraging, the first edition was totally about psychedelics because that was at the second Oakland Psychedelic Conference. After that, this is really just about the mushrooms. Like the inner fold tells you about the psychedelic mushrooms, and page 5 of 6 was like, hey, this is how you can learn how to grow any mushroom, really, not just psychedelics. But actually, my guy up in Humboldt Fungi, I met him in Arcata like 2-3 years ago, and he's like, yeah, the psychedelic mushrooms are cool, but I really just like use those as a means to get people to come out to the woods and look at these mushrooms. And the same thing happened to me. As soon as like, I'm a chemist, I was working in the cannabis space, we wanted to find out what's going on these psilocybin mushrooms. As soon as I got in the community, somebody was like, hey, you want to go look for them? Right. I'm like, okay. And then that, it was just so cool. Like, I grew up, I was in Boy Scouts, and so, like, I went out into the woods a bit when I was a kid, and this is, like, now a resurgence of my entrance into the nature, into the woods, and I'm like, this is dope. So each one of these has actually kind of had a theme where edition 2 was I think I had, like, turkey tails on it or something like that. 3, I featured huitlacoche in there to tell people about that. 4, I think I talked about puffballs and oyster mushrooms. 5 was focused on morels because, like, well, that was a super dope adventure. 6, the most recent one, is focused on chanterelles. And so, like, this kind of goes back to a conversation I was having with Will the other day. You said he was just in here.
Yeah.
And we're going on a forage this weekend. Maitake and Mary.
Masutake
and Mary. Yeah. And then like the cordyceps course. It's going to be super tight. But he was talking about seasonality and how he's noticed how, just like the mushrooms, there's the season for this mushroom, season for this mushroom. And they're in different parts of the country. You can actually make like almost a migratory pathway of like how you cycle through the country and always have an abundance of food. And I started to realize that as like chanterelles are almost like this wave. You know, when you're at a sports arena and they're like, ooh, the wave. The Chanterelle wave goes across America.
Summer on the East Coast.
Yeah.
It was all the way across.
Yeah, it was so cool. So, like, I'm from Wisconsin, and in Edition 6.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, man, I'm from Milwaukee. And
so, yeah, morels have a definite huge role in
especially down in, like,
in
Chicago,
Midwest.
For sure. Or in, like, Illinois, Indiana area, tons. But I've actually never found morels in the Midwest. I've actually only found them out in California. And,
at burn sites or...
Yeah, or whatever. But when I was in Chicago this summer, me and my buddy Alexander, we went out and we found like a ton of chanterelles. We like found a bunch of bolis. We found some porcinis. We had a great time. And then when I went on the East Coast, like you said, I've been traveling. So all of this different foraging that's happened over the past year has just been me getting geeked about the mushrooms. Me going out with my buddy Wumbo and Stabbing McDabbing out to find morels. And we... Like, he literally found a dog. Like, we went out there to find mushrooms, and, like, we're leaving, and we heard this little dog yelping. Like, somebody had abandoned probably the runt of the litter or whatever.
Oh, poor pup.
But now Marcella, the dog, is not a poor little pup. Now she's going to be trained to be, like, a truffle hunting dog.
I love that name.
Right? Yeah. Marcella was the coolest morel we found that day, and we found some really cool morels. And so now, like, I have an awareness of trees to look for in relationship to where the mushrooms are. I have an awareness of, like, environments and microclimates. Like, oh, how high elevated are we? Or, like, oh, how rainy is it? Or when did it rain? What are the kind of trees in this area? Are there apple trees? Or are there pine trees? Or are there this kind of spruces? Da, 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 da. And, like, are there dead or falling logs? Does this mushroom grow in a mycorrhizal situation? Like, all this vocabulary I had no idea about. I didn't think of myself as like a mushroom person outside of the psilocybin for a while. And I go home and I told my mom about this because she asked me a couple questions about mushrooms. She's like, wow, you know
a lot. You
didn't
realize how
this.
Much you know. Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit, yeah, I do know a lot about these things. I do know how to tell. Yeah, the gills are decurrent. You know.
That's right.
So I started foraging more.
Well, do you think that relationship, that deepening, that relationship with nature... I mean, that must have an impact on everything you do, even if it's working in the lab, even if it's doing kind of the bread and butter, which was analyzing psilocybin-containing mushrooms for research that you guys do.
Everything.
This must change everything.
It changes how I perceive the whole world because all these systems are interconnected. Things come in seasonality, and so seasonality exists in all aspects of life, whether it be business or whether it be nature, whether it be relationships or whether it be...
Timing is an important ingredient
on
in reality.
And all things, and the mushrooms keep me grounded in understanding that. It decomposes everything that I've learned previously and like breaks it down into meaningful and digestible energy. And so... Edition 6 was hella cool because we went on a mushroom tour. I had been going to different events like the Entheogen Expo in LA, and then Reggie was like, yo, we're going on tour across America. There's like this New Moon Mycology Summit, there's MycoFest, we're going to have some kickbacks in Denver and Chicago. And so on pages, I think this is 5 and 6 of the current Mycozine, I have QR codes across the whole thing where if you scan you can go to the real associated with each of these events. This is the Entheogen Expo. This is when we were in Denver.
That.
This is when we were in Chicago. This is when we were in MycoFest. This is when I went to Maine. This is the Mycopreneur podcast. Obviously, I'm going to put this in the next one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's going to be a QR code that links to this conversation in that. And I'm going to tie this back to what we were saying in the beginning of, now my mind's going a little crazy here, but I was just listening to a conversation with you and Will, and he was shouting out Alan Rockefeller of like, why did you start looking at DNA? He's like, because no one else is doing it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, shit. Right. And so I'm over here like, why am I creating the zine? It's because like everybody's on their phone. Nobody's touching anything real anymore. And so now I'm putting something simple in your hands that doesn't take much attention span. I mean, like, bro, if you don't have – this is a picture book for adults at best. You pull out your phone and it does have to work for you. You know what I mean? You just scan, bloop.
Which is sadly about what I have the capacity for sometimes.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
Like the world is so dynamic at this point that I'm not trying to make something.
I like the pictures and quick hits and do. My brain can interpret the tapestry in the zine and I get the download.
Boom.
You're like putting the little codes in there and it's just do. It triggers. I fill in the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about it is you can go back to it 4 or 5 times and you'll probably learn something new every time because there's so many little Easter eggs that I try to drop in there and I try to incorporate so many different people in there that even if you were to just not read any of the content on there at all and just see who are the different people, oh my God, you learn so much because there's just such a diversity of people on these things.
Do you feel like, I mean, we talked about cataloging your life, documenting what goes on. And I love when you said that. You're like, if you write it down, it didn't happen. Does that mean if I write it down, it will happen?
Yes.
I love that. But do you feel like this is something I've been thinking about recently, like mythologizing your own life, like telling your own story by literally writing your own story? Has that been something conscious where you're like, whoa, this has helped me? Or maybe that's just happening and I'm seeing it. I'm like, this guy is documenting his own life. He's got anthologies about himself.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty powerful practice to engage in.
No, man. Since I was little, I heard people saying the pen is mightier than the sword. And I was like, well, shit, how do we make that make sense? I've always been eloquent and capable of speaking pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I had a girlfriend like 4 or 5 years ago who was like, Tomas, you're poetic. Why don't you write any of this down? Because she was like a songwriter or something. And I'm like, nah, whatever. I was like, just write some of it down, damn it. Like, there's good shit here.
Yeah.
I stopped talking to her, but then I was like, that idea was good. You know what I mean? And so I started writing shit down, and I was like, if I even get 10%, screw it, 1%
right.
of the good ideas I had, guess what? I at least have 1%, I got 100% more than I had before. And what's crazier about this is I'm on book 24, but that means that I've also read through the old books a few times now too.
Right.
And so the gift that is so invaluable. I can't even tell you how cool of a gift it is to myself every single day that I'm giving future me to say like, yo, you've already learned this lesson. I've avoided... Yeah. And found amazing things simply by just rereading my notes, simply by just looking through books 1 through 4, 1 through 10 and being like, I did that same thing in a seasonal pattern and I dealt with these same people. Huh, maybe I shouldn't do that anymore. Or wow, this seemed to be really successful. When I drew that map at the back of the place, I got to where I was going.
It's the most effective therapy and self-improvement technique you can possibly do.
And it's right there for
your life. You can interpret it and learn the lessons even faster.
Oh my gosh.
Just having to hope you remember all the different parts. I love that. I love that entire... And this is a practice I want to start doing because I feel like it probably makes you better at speaking. It probably makes you better at conveying ideas.
I'm going to help you right now. It makes you better at writing.
Page one.
I just need you to do one thing on there.
Okay.
At the top, this is the most important thing. What is today's date?
11/8/23.
Ugh, you already won. You already won.
We wrote something.
No, but now this is the genius of the notes. And I'm going to tell you, if I can crystallize anything of what I've learned in this life of mine.
Yeah.
If you write the date, you've already won.
You write the date, you've won.
You've already won. And because the best pages in my notes are, in fact, days where I did nothing but write the date. In fact, those are my favorite days that I have. Like, if there's a... I might not even have too many in this book, but in almost every single one of my books, this great day, 7/14, great day. Great day.
It literally
just says the date.
7/14.
And then it's a 7/15 on the next one.
Yeah.
And all I wrote was down by the river with Cynthia. Like literally nothing. You know what I mean? By writing just the date and nothing else, those are my favorite days because all of the little information is inconsequential. What's consequential is the consistency. And when I first started taking notes, there would be like weeks of writing. Sometimes I'd write pages and pages a day. I would get really into it, super focused. And then I wouldn't write the date. And then I would forget about it for a couple of days. And then all of a sudden I'd look at my notebook and it's like 2 months later. And I'm like, shit.
Yeah.
But once you write the date, just the date, and you don't write anything else, and then you get to the next day and you write the date, just the date, nothing else, you don't really, or at least for me, I never got to 3 days before I looked at that. And I'm like, at first I feel a certain sense of guilt, like, damn, I had 2 days and I didn't write shit. But then it's the remembrance of like, oh my God, you're a genius. Like, you did write shit. And guess what? You didn't have to put zero energy. You didn't have to think about nothing. You didn't even have to talk about how you were feeling. You didn't have to put no emotions. You didn't have to talk about what you did. There's like zero thought process into writing down the date, but it does something and it's a gift to you.
You're programming.
Dude, I already put in the base code. Yeah. I already put in the base code that if you write down the date, it's good.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it sets this framework of if you can set reasonable and attainable goals.
Yeah.
Well, if you can't write the date, then you shouldn't be getting in the business of writing. You know what I mean? But if you can hit the date, then all of a sudden you're doing that one thing a day.
Right.
And so if I wrote the date over 3 months, so guess what? 100 pages, baby. Book 24, baby.
I've written a book.
Come on.
This is so funny. I'm hearing my wife in my head. She always says, we're all artists. Our work of art is our life. And she also says, if you write a word a day after a year, you've got pages.
Pages. So it's like... It's manifest. You're seeing it in real life.
This is the easiest, most approachable practice. This is like, be your own guru. Be your own guide. Just write the date.
That's it. You don't need to... It doesn't need to be so complex. Everything else, it can be. And it will be. It eventually gets there. But like, if you set the bar super low, then you're not beholden to any expectations. You're not beholden to anything. And then everything else is surplus.
And you're building a call to action for everybody. Let's do it.
We're not allowed to do that. We're not allowed to do call to action.
Commercial calls to action. Yeah. And actually, good reminder. We'll plug. We're on 103.3 KPCA in Petaluma Public Access. And I'll wrap things up because we're just getting to our normal time slot. The length of our normal time slot. I'll wrap things up with just a couple questions. And this one, it may be coming up in the next edition of the Mycozine.
Yeah.
Fungus of the moment.
Ooh, fungus of the moment. I should have came prepared with this one.
Well, that's the beauty of it. Like, did one pop into your brain? Is there one you've been pining over, looking for out in the woods, one you keep finding in the woods?
Yeah, I mean, I just went through this like spiral of all the mushrooms that I've seen this year. You know what? I'm going to manifest lion's mane as the one, because that's the only mushroom that's like common and edible that I have yet to find in the wild.
Ooh, okay.
And I know they're there. I know that they're there. I found some clawtooths. I found some hedgehogs. I found some lobsters. I found some morels. I found some chanterelles. I found some boleads.
I just need a dead log with a beautiful lion's mane on it.
I just need to find that. That's the one that I'm feeling right now. And I'm feeling like a lion. I'm feeling proud. This is good. So yeah.
You got the hair out. It's like a mane. Bang. It's all coming together. And then we've talked a lot about the future vision. I guess a book you're reading, or I think you're a book person, but just something that's inspiring you right now.
Something that's inspiring me right now.
Work of media.
Last book that I read that was mad inspiring to me was The Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler. And in there, and I'm not even going to butcher this. Oh, damn, I am going to butcher this quote because I don't have my phone on me. But I believe it goes like this. Everything we touch, we change. Everything we change changes us. The only everlasting truth is change. God is change. And to me, that was a really poignant quote, because the book takes place literally in California, literally in like 2024 to 2027, in the dystopian future where everything goes awry and people need to learn how to do permaculture and figure out things for themselves, and things get violent and everything hits the fan. And this was written, you know, decades ago.
Right. Close to home.
Yeah. Oh, bro, levels. It's happening. And it was really inspiring me to realize that, like, much like the mycelium, everything that we touch is interconnected. And so to try to be intentional about how I interact with people and how I create boundaries for myself, but also create containers for the people that I want to be in community with. And so I've been trying to be very intentional about like how I change the world around me and how the world around me changes me.
Maintaining that level of consciousness. I mean, it's kind of the great work that we're here to do, is maintain that level of consciousness and intention with the interactions, how we change ourselves, thereby we change the outside world, thereby we change ourselves, and it's entering that loop. Yeah. I've said that word so much the past few days, that alchemical loop, that kind of is what we're here to do. Well, Tomas, we're going to wrap it here for the radio. Again, 103.3 FM, pew, pew, KPCA. Pew, pew. Thank you so much for joining us. Tomas Garrett, Hyphy Labs, Mycozine. If people want to learn more, where do they go?
TheMycozine.com. They can check me out at Mycozine on IG. They can send me an email at themycozine@gmail.com. All of these three places, you can just send me your address or fill out a form on the website, and I'll send you a zine. We're trying to get this everywhere.
Beautiful. Thank you for coming on the show.
Appreciate it so much. This has been really fun.